This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina House Republicans are touting a bill this week that would expand health care coverage to low-income uninsured adults. Sounds a lot like Medicaid, but GOP lawmakers aren't too keen on that term. And the bill does diverge from Medicaid in that it sets out work requirements to ensure coverage. Similar work requirements were struck down by federal judges in Arkansas and Kentucky. Also in the legislature this week, a Republican proposed death by distribution bill for opioid dealers. It would lay stricter penalties for people who supply drugs that lead to an overdose death. All that plus campaigns are underway in the 3rd and 9th congressional districts. Early voting in the 3rd starts today. Here to run through these and other state political stories is WNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Hello, Jeff.
Good to see you, Frank.
Let's talk about the Republican-backed health plan, Don't Say Medicaid.
But let's say Medicaid, because that's really what it is. This is Medicaid expansion. This is it's being called Carolina Cares. It is similar to a proposal that was rolled out in the last legislative session. And we heard from House Republicans yesterday. This is a House proposal. Important to note, still unclear where the Senate is on this, or maybe that's, let me back up and say, still unclear if the Senate is going to agree to any sort of kind of expansion. This is a House endeavor at this point. A similar proposal died in committee in the last legislative session, and this proposal would add coverage to about 283,000 people who are presently in a coverage gap. Additionally, lawmakers noted yesterday that they estimate about another 195,000 folks who have insurance would potentially move over to this choice because it would be better coverage if this were enacted into law. So it's early. There are a lot of various costs and notes affiliated with this, but we have our latest proposal for covering the healthcare gap or Medicaid expansion.
All right, well, let's talk about the biggest details. First of all, who would be included in this coverage?
These would be people who are living above the poverty line, but at or beneath 133% of the poverty line. It would come at a cost, an estimated cost of $4.7 billion annually. That's the state's portion. If this were to move forward as it is proposed, the state would pay for 10% of it. The federal government would pay for about 90% of it precisely. And for people who do enroll, they would have to pay a 2%, approximate 2% premium of their household income.
All right. And there are rules attached to this, or potentially?
There are. And work requirements is this, it's this interesting elephant in the room because a number of states, 15 in total, have passed work requirements. And what you then have to do is go to the federal government to get a waiver. As of this moment, only one state has a work requirement that has been approved by the federal government and has not yet been struck down by a federal court. That is Indiana. And I believe there's still there is pending litigation against that. Just within the last couple of weeks, Arkansas and Kentucky had federal work requirements that were struck down. There is this effort to implement work requirements in other states, but it is unclear. And it smells as though this may very well be headed to the U.S. Supreme Court, but it is unclear if work requirements are going to carry the day. So while that is something that appeases some lawmakers on the right and some conservative groups and think tanks and folks that are following this, it's ultimately unclear if it's going to hang.
It's interesting, and it's because you're using federal dollars. Obviously, if you want to do a state program and pay for it yourself, you could put all the requirements you want. It's because of the use of federal dollars, 90% would come.
90% federal dollars. Yes.
This could have been done a long time ago by expanding Medicaid when they Medicaid under the ACA, but apparently that at that point it was not so attractive to
It was not attractive. State lawmakers actually moved to bar the governor from unilaterally expanding Medicaid, which is, I believe, what could have happened here had they not taken that step, what did happen in other states. So they have long tried to avoid the expansion of Medicaid. And one of the reasons that we hear frequently is the uncertainty of cost, both with whether or not the federal government could adjust and say, hey, we're no longer going to foot 90% of the bill. We're only going to, you know, cover 70 or 75% of it, what that could mean to state budget writers. And also the element of fluctuating health costs and not knowing where those might be in a few years. So fiscal conservatives have real trepidation about doing this.
So how far, and none of that has changed. So all of that is still true when it comes to the fact if you're relying on 90% federal funding, that could always change still, as it would have several years ago when we could have done this. So that hasn't changed. Some Republicans are on board. Does this mean others are still skeptical? How far will this thing get?
that is the huge question in the room at this point. Ultimately, Phil Berger, the leader of the state Senate, most powerful politician in North Carolina, would have to sign off on this, and he has not been convinced yet, based on the conversations we've had with him, that this is financially viable. There are some interesting provisions in this proposal. Have not spoken with him since yesterday, so it will be interesting to see if he has budged on this at all.
All right, we'll talk more about that. You are also following the death by distribution bill introduced by Republican lawmakers. What does that do?
Obviously, we're in this opioid epidemic. It's getting worse by most accounts. And North Carolina lawmakers have tried to take some policy action in recent years to try to combat what's going on. Tougher prescribing guidelines for doctors, and also trying to protect people who are coming out of surgery. Also making Narcan or Naloxone, the opioid reversal agent, more widely available to the public. So they have taken some policy measures. What they're now proposing is a bill that would give district attorneys across the state much greater discretion on whether to charge a dealer or a distributor with second-degree murder. They say this is a way to crack down on it. But we heard from a number of advocates, harm reduction advocates, friends and families of victims and users, and some users themselves yesterday, about the potential unintended consequences. A key central question here is, what is a distributor? And if two people are using drugs together, and what we have gleaned, we understand from the drug using community, is that often when heroin is being used, people will inject one another. So if person A injects person B overdoses, and person A is there and did the injection, could that person be charged with second degree murder? So that's one key question. And another element to this is whether or not, how you kind of square the immunity pathway with the Good Samaritan pathway.
Well, tell us about that, because that becomes a very interesting factor in all this.
North Carolina has, again, another policy effort, is they have strengthened their Good Samaritan laws in recent years so that if I am with somebody who overdoses and I call 911, I'm not going to get charged, whether I sold them the drugs or injected them with the drug, whatever it may be. So there are some provisions in place that act as a motivator for people to seek help for those who are in need. What we heard yesterday from folks who are opposing this bill is that they are concerned it would act as a deterrent. So that if there are a group of people who are using and somebody overdoses, someone says, "Hey, let's call 911. This person is overdosed." Someone else is going to say, "No. We're going to get charged with murder if we call the police." So the concern from their standpoint is that this is going to lead to unintended consequences and potentially more overdose deaths.
And once again, any idea of how well supported this is and how far it may get?
The two sponsors of this bill on the Senate side are two relatively powerful folks. One's the majority leader. The other is somebody who's running for Congress. It's going to get another. It got a hearing yesterday. No vote. It's back before a Senate Judiciary Committee today. It's possible that we're going to get some further definitions on distribution and some of the nuances of this bill. I think it moves forward. It's still too early to tell just how far it advances.
Well, finally, you've been following two special congressional elections, one in the 3rd District, the other in the 9th, and early voting starts today in the 3rd. Tell us what's going on. Let's start with the 3rd. What's happening there?
Gotta love North Carolina politics. 435 U.S. House seats, 3 vacancies across the whole country, 2 of them right here in North Carolina. The 3rd, of course, became vacant when Walter Jones passed away, the longtime congressman. That is a district that covers much of northeast North Carolina. It's a sprawling coastal plains district. 17 Republicans, 6 Democrats. It is a safely, firmly Republican district. And you've got a number of folks, and we're not going to tick off all the names to be fair to everybody, but you've got a couple of state lawmakers, a couple of people who are affiliated with the state GOP. The threshold to avoid a primary runoff is 30%. It seems unlikely that someone's going to do that, but it is possible. Primary in the 3rd is April 30th. Then in the 9th, this, of course, is the special election that was called for due to some absentee fraud. You've got 10 Republicans who are trying to get to the general election, where they will face Democrat Dan McCready. He's the one who lost narrowly in November. Primary there is on May 14th.
And McCready's doing well when it comes to fundraising.
He's raising a lot of money. Just announced yesterday $1.6 million raised in the first quarter. So whomever emerges from the Republican side is going to have probably a bit of a deficit when it comes to campaign
fundraising. As you say, he came very close in a firmly Republican district, and so we'll see what happens in a special election. Jeff DeBerry, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jeff is WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief, and you can find links to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we're going to to talk with a former health insurance company leader who now talks about Medicare for All and tells us why it's the best way to go. We'll talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.